Ultimately, at 3:05 that afternoon, Smith admitted the falsity of the Fort Scott tale. That was only something Dick told his family, so he could stay out overnight, do some drinking. See, Dick's dad watched him pretty close, afraid he'd break parole. So we made up an excuse about my sister. It was just to pacify Mr. Hickok. Otherwise, he repeated the same story again and again, and Dunce and Dewey, regardless of how often they corrected him and accused him of lying, could not make him change it, except to add fresh details. The names of the prostitutes, he recalled today, were Mildred and Jane, or Joan. They rolled us, he now remembered, walked off with all our dough while we were asleep. And though even Dunce had forfeited his composure, had shed, along with tie and coat, his enigmatic, drowsy dignity, the suspect seemed content and serene. He refused to budge. He'd never heard of the Clutters or Holcomb, or even Garden City. Across the hall, in the smoke-choked room where Hickok was undergoing his second interrogation, Church and Nye were methodically applying a more roundabout strategy. Not once during this interview, now almost 3 hours old, had either of them mentioned murder, an omission that kept the prisoner edgy, expectant. They talked of everything else. Hickok's religious philosophy. I know about hell. I've been there. Maybe there's a heaven, too. Lots of rich people think so. His sexual history. I've always behaved like a 100% normal. And once more, the history of his recent cross-country hegira. Why we kept going like that, the only reason was we were looking for jobs. Couldn't find anything decent, though. I worked one day digging a ditch. But things unspoken were the center of interest. The cause, the detectives were convinced, of Hickok's escalating distress. Presently, he shut his eyes and touched the lids with trembling fingertips. And Church said, "Something wrong? A headache. I get real bastards." Then Nye said, "Look at me, Dick." Hickok obeyed, with an expression that the detective interpreted as a pleading with him to speak, to accuse, and let the prisoner escape into the sanctuary of steadfast denial. "When we discussed the matter yesterday, you may recall my saying that the Clutter murders were almost a perfect crime. The killers made only two mistakes. The first one was they left a witness. The second, well, I'll show you." Rising, he retrieved from a corner a box and a briefcase, both of which he'd brought into the room at the start of the interview. Out of the briefcase came a large photograph. "This," he said, leaving it on the table, "is a one-to-one reproduction of certain footprints found near Mr. Clutter's body. And here," he opened the box, "are the boots that made them. Your boots, Dick." Hickok looked and looked away. He rested his elbows on his knees and cradled his head in his hands. "Smith," said Nye, "was even more careless. We have his boots, too, and they exactly fit another set of prints. Bloody ones." Church closed in. "Here's what's going to happen to you, Hickok," he said. "You'll be taken back to Kansas. You'll be charged on 4 counts of first-degree murder. Count 1, that on or about the 15th day of November 1959, one Richard Eugene Hickok did unlawfully, feloniously, willfully, and with deliberation and premeditation, and while being engaged in the perpetration of a felony, kill and take the life of Herbert W. Clutter. Count 2, that on or about the 15th day of November 1959, the same Richard Eugene Hickok did unlawfully," Hickok said, "Perry Smith killed the Clutters." He lifted his head and slowly straightened up in the chair, like a fighter staggering to his feet. "It was Perry. I couldn't stop him. He killed them all."